Welcome to the Boost Podcast with me, Graham Farmer, and today we've got a Boost Podcast special. I'm handing over the reins today to our data transmission roving reporter, Anish. He sat down and had a round table discussion with the guys from Summarized Sessions and had a full-on chat. You can actually go and read the transcripts over on datatransmission.co, but I thought we'd put the audio on the podcast because it fits nicely. And I hope you enjoy it. So let's dive into this. See you next time.
Data Transmission, my name is Anish, and I'm here doing a very exclusive round table interview with the guys from Summarize Sessions. Yeah! Woo! Oh, yeah. So let's just have a quick intro with everyone, your names and what you do.
Shane Fernandez, owner of Summarize Sessions.
Kieran Lithgow, events coordinator and resident DJ.
Paulina Scoran, events operations manager.
Amazing. And joining us, we have the one and only...
Donna Love, and I'm in charge of the artist bookings for the events.
Right, so you guys are basically putting on a tour. You've just finished your first tour, which was last year, 2019. As far as I gathered, which is kind of pretty much the inspiration behind doing this particular piece, it went down kind of well. Is that fair to say?
I think it's went down very well.
Yeah, like it looked incredible. It looked incredible.
Took us by surprise almost.
Yeah. It really did go down very well, yeah.
Yeah. So how would you say that first tour, what made you come to that point? Why are we going to do a tour?
Well, the whole tour's a Secret Garden Rave tour. It's part of one of the event concepts. And basically what started off as a good event in London was and many sold out shows with different venues like 93 Feet East, yeah, and Steelyard. We decided to take it on tour because it was one of our most popular parties, and it would be unfair if we didn't actually take a more successful event from the capital and take it all across the country. So that's how we decided, and the rest is history, because we've been to most of the major cities last year, and it's been an entirely learning experience working with different people, different venues, and sourcing different crews from different places. But it's been a massive learning experience, and I think we came out on top.
Yeah, and to add to that, yeah, you've got to take risks with these things. It was so successful in London, it seemed a natural consequence to go around the country, yeah, and it's paid off.
The next step, basically, yeah.
Banging.
Yeah, what these guys said, basically. So this is my first year, so I don't really have a frame of reference to what was going on before, but it's such a successful event, not to be taken outside of London, it would be a massive shame. And yeah, I think that was predominantly what the thinking was behind it, so that we can just share the love around the UK, really. And it did go really, really well, but it had its challenges, and I think we've all worked very hard and things were stressful, but at the end of the day, that's what makes a good event, you know? You're going to work hard and then deliver something that's amazing for everyone, and we managed to do that.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, yeah, no, definitely, from what I saw online, so you do like after movies, that's a thing now, I've seen quite a few people do it, but you guys are really, your after movies are incredible.
Yeah, they get a lot of attention.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And just they look banging. Like, they look amazing. Like, they're so good.
I'm sourcing the right videographers and photographers for those. I mean, you get the right people in, and there's a lot of people doing that, but you've got to get the people who can get it looking that good.
There's
two sides to it. Obviously, you can get the best videographers as well, but there's also putting an event up of that stature to kind of, to capture those moments, and those moments are created by creating an event. Not just putting DJs on and not just, and running a night. This is putting an experience on, which is, music, a visual experience and everything all together, which actually keeps your crowd engaged and basically delivers something that looks like what you see in those videos. So, it's creating all of that together.
It's amazing how popular the shows have been as well in the other cities, because it's all been new territory for us as well. It's always a big risk when you take a show that's been unheard of previously to a new city. You don't know if it's going to go down well or not, but just you can see from the after movies that they've just gone down an absolute treat. Just that the crowds have all come and just enjoyed it, just really thrown themselves into it as well. So It's been a big success last year.
Yeah, wicked. Definitely looks like that. So the way I understand it, Secret Garden Rover was a concept that came out of Summarized, is that right?
Yeah. So Summarized has been what started off as a mix CD, and then it evolved into a radio show, and then turned into events, basically. And it's been going on since 2013.
Yeah.
And ever since, we've done day parties, we started After Dark, and Secret Garden Rave was a similar concept that we kind of came up with, where we wanted to create this whole experience. And in the beginning it was us getting our hands dirty and kind of doing the production ourselves, putting up deco and getting all of that done ourselves, getting, you know, confetti all across us for days, for weeks.
The worst part of it was taking it down afterwards. We had to be responsible for that when you do what's called a dry hire, and it was just horrendous, with a hangover as well.
After the party's over, turning up the next day, that was painful.
It was, yeah. It's something we chose not to do again.
Yeah, I mean, I can't totally imagine that. Brilliant. So I started as a mixed CD, and so where did you come up with, like, to do the whole, like, to have the deco? Because the deco is sick. Yeah, the deco is so good.
We've always kind of had deco with our parties. We've always kind of had basic kind of, you know, deco that we kind of did ourselves, whether it was, you know, basic promo stuff, or when we worked with other promoters, we kind of did some deco ourselves, where we've done that with Solu. When we worked with them, we did some deco. So we've always kind of had deco, and kind of we always wanted to introduce a bit of deco or something that, you know, kind of, you know, something different to the others. So Seeking Garden Rave was something that was bound to happen anyway. It was, and we wanted to create an immersive experience. And I think when we had this first conversation about creating this new party, and we had this, you remember when we had this at Road Trip, and we were thinking what? And so we had to think of the concept, we had to think of the deco, and we had to think of you know, the name and everything came together. And we did our first show, and it was absolutely, you know, it went viral, it went, you know, and that was it, basically. Wow. And we knew we were on the right track. Mm. So we never stopped from there.
Fantastic.
Nailed the concept and then developed it from there.
Yeah, and then the rest is, like, it just builds from there.
Wicked. So what were, like, the must-haves and must-nots that you wanted to bring from having it as, like, a standalone party? Because I remember when I first came to SGR in Steelyard, which is now one of my favourite venues because of that event, that actual party that you guys put on, I was like, this is just incredible, right? This place is amazing. So going from standalone events to a whole tour, what would you say are, like, things you did definitely want to bring, and other things that you learned lessons not to make a mistake with again?
Having an audience, you know, having a crowd, obviously, definitely, to deliver something like this, because it costs a lot.
Mm.
So yes, you have to kind of know your market, know who you're selling to, and kind of, you know, gauge from that, as in how much you spend and everything. And don't overspend, because you could end up, you know, broke. So we've taken it in our stride and kind of started off slowly before we kind of, without taking giant strides. We've been adventurous in certain ways, as in tapping different cities, but we've done it very calculatively. And the new year, we're actually doing it even more so. So the must-haves is actually knowing your market and knowing your audience. And I don't know, the must-nots, there's a few must-nots, I think, more between ourselves. No, as in
I would say
must actually
definitely make sure the CO2 cannon's connected.
I think to add on that, I think the biggest must-have for me personally is having a team, like a really well sort of organized team, because nobody could do this on their own. There's too many things to look into, to look after. So I think that was the tour only make it happen. And I'm not tooting my own trumpet at all, but what I'm saying is that I joined, Donna joined, we have Elena as well, and then that basically enabled us to do so much more in such a shorter time space, I imagine. Again,
yeah.
I have little frame of reference from what was going on before.
It wouldn't
but...
be possible to do a tour without the team we've got now.
But,
yeah, because before when we did the London stuff, it was Kieran and me when we started off, and you know, and then this year we started obviously the whole not this year sorry last year 2019. We built a team, and it wasn't just about delivering events. It was actually a whole team building exercise that
wow.
went hand in hand with the events.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think what Polina's saying is basically, you know, must have as a team, that, you know, a proper events operations team that actually delivers this, you know, because you can't do that. We couldn't have done that just one person or two people, because there's so much detail that goes into these events now, so you know it can't be done by one person, so it's a big operation.
Okay.
And I don't think that I'm not sure that people realize, but we actually have full-time jobs. This is not our job. This is what we do as part-time on the sides. It's just like we actually have jobs that take up all of our weeks. So that basically goes hand in hand with actually being able to kind of disperse all these different responsibilities.
So also I think on the artist and headliner side of things, it's quite important to book a headliner that's very relevant in the scene, you know, does a lot of shows that are current, has a lot of releases out on Beatport. I mean, you could book a headliner that is a very well-known name, but they maybe just haven't been as present on social media, and they're not going to bring as much of a crowd. So it's little things like that all adds to making the show a success as well, I think.
Yeah, we're not the big boys.
No.
Right.
Not yet.
We have been called the Mini Elro a couple of times.
Really?
Yeah.
Who might?
Me.
So going back to the transition from a standalone to a tour, how's the workload changed with you individually? Like, or because you all do different things, so how's it changed? So yeah, so for Donna, for example, how's it changed for you?
So being in charge of like the artist bookings, it's not just headliners that I look after. It's everything to do with artists, residents, guests. So things like negotiating with the agency for headliner fees, contracts, things down to like, you know, do we cover travel and accommodation, all the little sort of details like what would their rider be, what technical setup do they need. On the residents and guests side of things, it's like a sort of run the team of whichever guys we've picked to DJ for the night, just sort of making sure they're on top of all the social media side of things. So for example, sending invites to the Facebook event, things like just sharing, liking posts, and just really shouting about the event just to get it more out there. And again, you know, raise awareness of the event. So it's a quite a broad thing that I deal with. It's just everything to do with artists. And everything that sort of branches off from that as well.
Oh, good.
Yeah, I think it all adds up because, you know, for us to be where we are in our capacity as a smaller brand compared to the big guys out there, we're going up against the big brand. So, like Donna said, it's very essential for artists, kind of, you know, everyone, a collective effort to kind of put this brand out there, put these events out there, because otherwise it's, you know... otherwise it wouldn't happen, because you have to have unless you are two room or unless you're defected and you're doing festivals and those sort of, you know, people don't know who you are. So when you're small, you need a collective effort, kind of, you know, if you're competing against these guys, you know, because you're competing against the big events. And what we do is kind of, you know, at this stage right now, that's exactly what we're doing. We're competing against the big guys.
And I think in terms of the workload, it was all of the hard work that was put into actually make a name of ourselves in London, now you have to extend to other cities. So that is exponentially harder, obviously, because nobody has heard about you. You have to do all that much more work to actually get yourself noticed on that particular scene. And especially when you're talking about cities that are quite, you know, clubbing capitals outside of London, like Manchester, let's say, you know, to break through the noise within that market, it's quite a bit. So effectively, the other thing you have to remember that we are working on multiple events at the same time. So it's not like we do event and then we move to the next one. We're basically working on three events ahead of time. So throughout the entire year. So once it closes down, the next one comes in. So it's a continuing rota. So just if anything, it would be basically one versus three in terms of workload and what you do.
Wow.
So whatever you do on one event, you have to do for two others at the same time, continuously throughout the year.
Bloody hell.
So quite a jump.
Yeah. That sounds stressful as fuck.
There's a big thing as well. I'm responsible for the crew, so you've got videographers, photographers, dancers, glitter artists, things like that. And in London, we've got a lot of people we know now who we can rely on. We're going to another city where we don't know anybody. We have to go on recommendations, Facebook posts. You have to start researching who's the hot person to do the photography, videography, dancing in that new city. And that, again, is a bit of a nightmare, to be honest, especially when you go to somewhere brand new.
Yeah, because you don't know who's who and who's doing what where.
Yeah.
But saying that, I think that's all kind of, you know, what we've taken in 2019. Because, you know, when you do a whole year of events like we have, you kind of build. And now, what we've been working through is building the team, like I said earlier on. And what happens is you make this into regular BAU stuff, which kind of you think ahead and kind of once you've done a whole year of doing this, this comes second nature because we've been delivering so many events. Now this, you know, the aim is for 2020 is to kind of make this as seamless as possible because we've been doing so many and we've looked at what if scenarios and we looked at, you know, the stuff that we've done wrong and we've kind of, you know, so we know kind of with the experience that we have now, it kind of takes us to the next level where we can deliver, you know, if not more events than we did last year, but more seamless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just going on from that, what would you say you've had to sort of amend to that transition from small to big?
Well, the biggest thing you have to look at when you go from small to big is budgets. So we've had to kind of, you know, when you approach different cities, you know, and kind of look at your clients, do a background of clubs you work with, everything, every different aspect of that goes, you know, is research of, you know, from the high level, as in the city you're kind of targeting, to the lowest level, to the club, and then the passing trade, the engagement that the club has, and, you know, the crowd that actually visits these clubs. So we've actually picked very specific clubs that we actually work with, even down to, you know, the logistics, as in we have a lot of decor, we can't, you know, we've learned even in 2019 that we have to have certain plans, floor plans for a club that we need to have a standard that we can actually have these parties at, you know, because there's a lot of detail that needs to happen, like you have to have high ceilings and all of that, so that's what we look at now, you know, and we're doing it this year even better than we did last year.
Yeah, bringing in new people as well, like Elena's doing ticket work, knows all the different ticket websites, and they're different in different cities up north. You Skiddle down here, it's RA. And bringing in Paulina to do the whole operations management really helps on making the whole thing a lot more organised, a lot more seamless.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the organisation is key because we're doing multiple events at a time.
Yeah.
There's a lot of factors into each and single event. Each and single event is slightly different from the reasons that Shane just mentioned, you know, because it's a different club, it's a different setting. You have to work with it. You have to know which questions to ask, when to ask them and ask them before, and basically prep. So that is definitely something that's key. You can just wing it on the day because it's far too much at stake.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So you have to be very organized and kind of very fastidious. So we've introduced a lot of stuff this year to get that done.
Yeah, that's prep on the day. That's another whole
game.
Yeah,
cool.
And it's all thinking ahead as well, isn't it? So it's, you know, thinking ahead of, you know, when you look at a club, say, you know, for example, this
anticipate,
year,
yeah.
you have to think, what can we do with this club?
Yeah. What we cannot do as well.
What we can't do in a club.
Yeah, exactly. So, interesting point then. What would you say you can't do at a club?
There'll be issues, for example, with the decor. Like, we can't hang certain things in certain ways because of the lighting rigs or regulations, or there's not enough space on the stage for the dancers, and how do you actually maneuver everything around?
Hiring stages,
whether you can have fire or not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You guys
have had fire before. I think that was the last Studio Yard, wasn't it?
We've had fire at Steel Yard. We had fire at 93 Feet East.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that in itself brings a whole heap of different things that you have to look after because this is risk assessments, etc. So,
going back to you saying you're working with different clubs and venues, how do you decide which headliner goes to which club?
Yeah, I mean, we take a few different factors into account, really. What I mentioned before, just them being current as well, just, you know, with their productions and with actually getting out and about on social media, doing shows. But we also take into account what musical style they play as well. That's probably the most important thing. Because, for example, for Secret Garden Rave, the music policy is quite sort of tech house, verging into techno.
Okay.
So, you know, that would be the biggest sort of thing that we would look at, you know, what headliner would actually fit the event that we're putting on as well. But then you've got regional variances as well, you know, for example, the crowd in Glasgow might like it a bit heavier than down in Brighton, for example, or, you know, so you would sort of tailor it towards that. You've got to take a lot of things into account, like the audience that are most likely to attend your events as well.
Yeah. So going back to your previous point, Kieran, about like what happens on an actual evening being a whole different story.
Yeah, so on the day, you've got so much going on. And also, again, having prep for that and knowing, having like a checklist, for example, and making sure that everything is absolutely covered. And there's so much going on. As long as you're going through it like a flow chart and making sure that everything's kind of ready. You've got all the crew turning up at different times. You've got to have someone to meet and greet them. You've got the whole production on stage. You've got the confetti cannon CO2. Yeah, the DJ setup, sound tests and all that. You've got the decor guys who come in. And there's a whole manner of stuff going on. And when we started off, when it was just me and Shane, it was kind of like, we learned a lot about what can go wrong and what you need to kind of prep for. And over time, eventually, we brought Paulina in. And Pauline has a lot more experience now with how to do this on a bigger scale. So
yeah.
it's not turning up on the day and just seeing what, you know, winging it anymore. It's actually, there's a lot on the day. I think there's, on the day could be broken down into a lot now.
I think it's,
starting from the day, because
I think
the decor guys come in, go on.
It's kind of like, it really starts like 48 hours before, because that's your
right, so you're on the day is actually 2 days in
oh
advance.
God, yeah, absolutely, it has to be, because you cannot just show up and think, oh, what's going on. The 48 hours is kind of when you start making final checks that everybody's still there, everybody's still available, nothing's wrong, everybody knows where they're going, everybody's still on board. Then 24 hours checks, kind of like making sure that all the details are, again, everything is fine, and the guys will, when be coming, when the club will open. Then on the day itself, you actually have to go and meet the guys. And this is what we think we've learned through this entire year, that it is vital for us to come in very early in the day just to check how things are going, because sometimes they're going smoothly, sometimes they're going absolutely shit. And you kind of have to be able to react there and then and try to fix certain problems and kind of get people involved. Other than that, you would just literally show up at 9 o'clock and be, let's say, faced with half of the decor not being up because there was a problem that you didn't know. So there's a lot of things that there's like loads of checklists that I put like together to make sure that we have everything sorted, that we have the sound check, that, you know, all the stuff that you would normally even think that people would do, you still have to check that people did do.
Yeah.
So you don't assume anything. Everything is checked and triple checked and make sure that everything is done on properly like it should be.
Hmm.
And then all the prep that we've done throughout this entire period, that basically leaves you time to react to things on the day they happen, because it's events, something will always go wrong. But the whole point of it is that it doesn't matter if it goes wrong, it matters that no one out there who paid to be there notice it or knows that something went wrong or something's missing or something is just not right, you know. And my personal learning was that I took it really to heart when something didn't work, because it was nothing I could do. It just doesn't work. End off, you know, and it really hit me hard. But nobody in the audience knew any better, so and they had an amazing time. So that's the kind of stuff that you, as an event person, have to be able to provide to people. You know, that's what we do, and that's why on the day is so important and so engaged.
So that brings you to, you know, one of the must-haves.
Okay.
But having the must-have is being calm in all situations and thinking, it is what it is. What do we do from here? And that's what it is. I think, you know, this is something, you know, when we used to do even second rooms and stuff like that in the past, that we trained ourselves, I've trained myself to kind of, you know, dealing with what goes wrong. I always prep myself, even when we did Pasha, like, you know, decks don't work, one deck goes off, you know, something's wrong, sound checks, the speaker doesn't work, the amp's blown or something. Always preparing for something to happen, and if it does, you know, you just know that, right, it is what it is. What do we do from here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, from small examples of when we did egg once, and, you know, I had all this, the screen visuals and everything ready, and I had stuff that I was going to give out. And then we left all of that stuff at the back of a taxi.
Oh, wow.
And basically, we didn't have anything, but it was dealing with what we had at the time, doing, you know,
yeah.
It is what it is. Move on. What
well, there was a particular
it's
event.
A night, you know.
There was a particular event in 93 Feet. It's one of the first Secret Garden raves that we'd done. And at this point, it was just me and Shane. And so much was going wrong in the early stages, and stuff you couldn't have prepped for at all, like the door staff going to the wrong venue because they'd just not read any texts or messages. The burger van guy having a breakdown because he'd spilt his oil everywhere. The VA guys, some of the crew were falling out. And then their accommodation didn't exist. That had been booked.
Wow.
So on the day, I had to rebook accommodation for them. And it's just, you learn how to mitigate against them by debriefing at the end.
Yeah.
But with those things, you can't prepare for.
Yeah.
So you just have to, like Shane said, keeping a cool head is so essential. If you get stressed, it affects everybody else.
And give you enough space on the day. So literally, if everything goes smoothly, you shouldn't be doing anything.
Mm.
That's the goal.
Okay.
So you have all that space. So when things do go wrong, you have the time to deal with them. You have the time to, you know, find a new set of decks or try to fix an effect or get something else, you know, because if you're still confirming people coming through the door or, you know, ticket sales or DJs coming through, it's just time just escapes. So
yeah.
that's what we've learned throughout this year, really, to
cool.
kind of have that level playing field and keeping a cool head.
What was the question?
That was the question. That was the question.
It was about on the day.
On the day.
Yeah.
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 It is a big subject. So
it is a big subject.
So yeah, actually, we all spoke to the point.
Right. Oh, sorry. Just to kind of add like a little sprinkle on that. And again, on the day, it's not just before the door actually opens. It's working through the entire night and then slightly post.
Mm.
Because you are constantly on call, de facto. You know, there's constantly things going wrong, people asking questions, anything and everything. So you have to make sure that everything goes right, you know, and it doesn't stop. So you basically pretty much spend about 12 to 14 hours just constantly working and running around.
And that's why the after parties are so essential.
we laugh about that, but yeah, they're fucking up.
Because that's where you decompress. That's where you actually kind of think, fuck, yeah,
that's
okay, now I can have an actual, like, you know,
drink.
I can drink and party properly.
No, and like Shane just said, actually, that is the debrief. I mean, because that is where you guys will just sort of sit around sometimes with people that have been there, sometimes just some of your headlines.
But to be honest,
casually,
maybe, yes.
Yeah.
But we have a proper
debrief.
Yeah,
of
course.
We have a proper ops catch-up. And
There's a post-event, whole sort of debrief / different things that need to be closed off and confirmed. There's a whole section there, and only then you can actually close the event.
An event's not wrapped up on the day of the event.
No.
There's a lot after.
Yeah.
There's a lot that goes on after. So, like, we meet. We have meetings everywhere, all of us, all together, every week. And kind of, you know, there's a lot of work that goes on before, after the event. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what it sounds like to me is the fact that you've got this big run-up to, like you said, you've got 48 hours in advance of the actual event itself, but it goes all the way up there, and then towards the end, it does the same thing, but backwards. So you come out of it with the same sort of curve as you go into it.
To a lesser extent, it's not as big a curve because it's not as much time.
Yeah.
But there is a curve. It's not just like it just stops here and then it's a slump. It's just like it's still there's a debrief bit. There's invoicing. There's all sorts of different things that need to be
something
like
that.
You know?
So one goes down and the next event's coming up, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know,
for the benefit of people listening, Shane's showing off his guns.
<Like, laughs>
I was trying to show you graphs.
Wow.
Okay, cool. So just quickly, because it is something that I just did want to sort of ask about, stuff that's gone wrong on the night. Have you had any headliner or artist problems on the actual night itself? At all, ever?
Really?
I don't think so. I think every headliner who's played for us has actually absolutely loved, got involved with us, got mixed around with the team, and actually loved playing for us. And most of them usually want to come back.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't think...
we look after them.
Do you want to Any? Do you remember anything of your own?
I don't think so. No, I mean, there's not been anyone that hasn't turned up. You know, mm-hmm. there's been no disasters that way. Everyone's been on time. No, so far so good. Touch wood.
We've said that. Bloody
yeah. No, I mean, most headliners love playing for us. I think once they've met us and everything, and they've always kind of complimented the way we do our things, how we run things. So yeah, I think.
I mean, the Walsh Wood incident.
I don't know, but I
think what we actually do is we actually bring them, like, we invite them to dinner, we try to get them engaged outside of the actual just show up and play situation.
Okay, yeah, so you do actually.
And if they do, they don't, that's absolutely down to them. And some do, some don't, but the invitation is there. So we try to bring them on more than just come and, like, we pay you to do the job and then you bugger off type of thing.
It's not strictly business with us. It's basically being part of it's like a family reunion. And most events with Sunrise have always been that way, because, you know, put Secret Garden Raves to the side as well. We've always kind of had events going back, you know, and we used to always kind of, the good thing was all of us meeting up, having a good time and everything. So
yeah,
even now, before an event, we kind of all meet up for dinner, get the headliners, everyone, friends, everyone, just have dinner and then head to, you know, the venue, do our jobs basically. And that's, you know, it's not just running an event, it's not just business, it's a family.
You really do put on a vibe. No, wow, that's amazing.
I mean, that all contributes towards, add, you know, creating an atmosphere and actually adding a feel.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
And it's not a machine, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the reason why the headliners and guests do always ask to come back as well. You know, they just because they do feel so welcome and have a good time.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, man.
And many of them do. So, yeah, many of the headliners actually ask to actually come back. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got no prima donna policy.
Brilliant.
That is true.
Yeah.
We do have a...
No, prima donna policy.
No, interest in arrogance.
Again, and that was one of the things I noticed when I first... Well, Gemma, I put it in the article, like, everyone here, there's no egos. Everyone's in, like, a nice... It is a family unit, even between those that don't... Even if you've just met each other and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the tour coming up, because last year looked amazing. It felt amazing. Some of the ones I attended were incredible. Some of the after movies, some of the northern parties, like Manchester. You did Liverpool, right? Leeds, that was it. Leeds.
Yeah. Right.
Leeds looked nuts. So what's in store for us this year? What's happening? What are you bringing the people?
It's a very big year for us this year. I mean, we're kind of doubling up on the events that went, the cities that were successful last year, and we've taken into account new cities which we are targeting this year as well. And we've already started the events up, and they're looking great. We're going back to Manchester. We're going back to where we're still in London. We've got three shows in London. We've got Liverpool. We've got Bournemouth, we've got Glasgow, and there's still more shows. We're still kind of in the process of kind of, you know, getting in. So there's still, you know, still to be confirmed. And so there's a lot coming, and it's, everything's taken to a new level at the moment from the event side, the decor side. We're switching things up this year, so it's a very exciting year. Yeah. And
I've already seen, like, your artwork already has changed, hasn't it? So
I think this year we're trying to push a little bit outside of our safety box, so to speak, because in terms of the decor, especially in terms of how we approach the parties themselves, we're trying to push ourselves a little bit further, because obviously we have a feel that we want to continue with, but at the same time we don't want to bring the same product to the same people over and over again. You have to expand. You have to kind of play around with it, so we're looking into innovating that a little bit more. So yeah, definitely very excited about that.
Bang it. Yeah, I mean, a great thing as well is the excitement's really building up. Glasgow Live did a whole review article on the upcoming Glasgow show in September. And that wasn't, we didn't know anything about that. That was picked out for the event.
In September as well, that's quite a while away.
And there's been so many messages about that event.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Who from? Like, punters or
punters, but also people wanting to work dancers, glitter artists, anyone.
So there's a lot of build up towards these things now, and it's working really well. I think what we started off in 2019 is finally shaping our 2020, because it wasn't 2019 plan. It was a work in progress. The whole of 2019 was work in progress towards what we're kind of building.
Okay.
And what we're building is something that even 2020 for us is work in progress, because the finished product's going to be something that, you know, we will kind of blow everyone's minds, and this is what we're working towards. Mm-hmm. And 2020 is a massive part of it, because we started off in 2019 on the tour, and now we're just getting better and better at it. So I think 2020 is something anyone who's out there should definitely actually come and experience these shows. They're not just about throwing DJs and, you know, and the rest is kind of, you know, just music is an essential part of these parties, but we create an experience. And anyone out there who's not experienced this, I would definitely say experience it at least once, and then you can make your, you know, choice.
I would sort of build up on that as well, saying that, you know, I don't think we'll actually ever have a finished product. We'll keep pushing.
Mm.
We'll keep pushing.
True.
We keep innovating. We keep like challenging ourselves. We keep throwing different things, you know, and kind of even with Secret Garden Rave itself, it will keep evolving, because obviously that's the whole idea, to, you know, keep on doing what you're doing, but better and better and bigger and more exciting. But as Shane was saying, I think we have a very singular, perhaps, proposition out there in the market, because obviously, you know, you have amazing promoters putting amazing shows on, but they're mainly focused on getting a great lineup and having a great light show.
Yeah.
But what we do bring is that environment, that kind of, you know, this kind of like a different feel to a room when you walk in and start to dance and have a good time.
It's an immersive experience.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's an experience, as we keep saying throughout this whole thing.
Yeah.
It's an experience. It's not just you go raving. You just go and interact in a slightly different way with the environment that you're in. So that enhances your entire, basically, experience as it stands.
I've had friends come to our show one time, and they don't like house music. They hate it. They're like overly critical about it, almost.
Yeah.
And they came to one of the shows and they said they had one of the best nights of their life. And it's because it's not, I mean, the music's a massive part, but it's such a good experience. They absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you can inspire someone who doesn't listen to house music into listening to house music through something like this, then why not?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally.
100%.
Yeah.
So I think the other thing that I just wanted to mention is that we do bring a very specific kind of crowd, a very sort of engaging, very open, very sort of a friendly kind of crowd. Like sometimes you can go to an event and it's a great event, it's great music, it's great lights, but everybody seems to be a little bit, you know, off on their own little worlds, off in their own little groups.
Mm.
Whereas with our events, everybody seems to be doing it together, and everybody's like, you know, making new friends, looking after each other, and it's all kind of seems to be bringing this really, like this very communal vibe, if
inclusivity.
That makes sense. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah.
Like the likes of which, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to find in any other sort of events of a similar
nature. Get some great feedback on Skiddle, report reviews from people, and they actually clearly have gone to a bit of time and detail about how good the time was.
Yeah,
fantastic.
So, yeah,
amazing.
The whole 2020 thing is a very exciting year ahead, and on all fronts, like I said, we're switching things up, and it's not just production, it's on all fronts. On production, on the branding, on the with the headliners, the artists, everything collectively is going to switch up, and it's a big year. It's a massive year.
Yeah.
Wicked.
From a headliner point of view, I mean, there's obviously a whole tour to organise for the year ahead, so we're heavily under construction of all the lineups at the minute, just trying to book as many headliners up front as possible so we get the sort of our pick of the bunch, basically. All the main ones on our wish list. So, I mean, there's not too much I can disclose about names at the minute. We've only announced our Manchester event just now, which is going to star Pirate Copy, a big name in Manchester, because he runs his Kaluki events, and also Children's Maxime. So there are two headliners. It's a double bill for Manchester. I can give you a couple of hints in that we're looking at having two of our more sort of popular or favourite artists from 2019 back again to feature on the tour.
Okay.
And we also have one big name in particular who's been on the scene for over a decade, which we're really excited if this goes through. But these are all sort of under wraps and under construction at the minute. But there's lots of exciting headliners to announce.
Amazing. Wow. Sounds incredible. I'm like, really looking forward to it.
I don't even think I know about that.
I don't want to get in your way. Like, I feel like you guys got so much work to do. We should just generally cut this off. I'm just going to throw myself out the window, to be honest. Get out of here as quick as I can. Amazing. Well, thanks very much, guys. I've been Anish. These guys have been the Summarizer. And, of course, the round table. Thank you and good night. Yay!